Hey y'all, this is Marcus King, and you're listening to Pantheon Podcast.
History in five songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Hello, once again, Martin Popoff back again for another episode of History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff. Pleased, as always, to be part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, available on Spotify, iTunes, and over 40 other podcast platforms. This episode, episode 45, we are going to be calling Shocked by Synths. Yeah, pretty interesting. I had a hard time picking the number two slot in this. I'll explain in a minute, but I wanted to set some parameters to this. I wanted to talk about synthesizers in hard rock, but number two is going to be a prog band, just to warn you. But prog enters into this whole thing in a number of ways. But I wanted it to be about synthesizers and not so much keyboards or electronic drums or piano, the shocking element of these other kinds of keyboards in rock, in hard rock, in prog rock. And I also wanted this to be... essentially valid to the idea of, I remember being shocked the first time this happened, and it being kind of an important thing that made me think about synthesizers in rock. So there you go. There's the parameters. We'll explain when we get to number two why we have a prog band in here. I mean, I can see putting prog in a lot of these episodes. I've got punk in these episodes as well. There's going to be some classic rock as well, but our core is always going to be kind of the hard rock context. So okay. So let's go to our first entry here, History in Five Songs, and take a listen, and we shall discuss. This is Led Zeppelin with Carousel Ombra. All right, so kicking off this whole thing. So basically, hard rock and heavy metal has always been a guitar thing. It's always my definition of heavy metal. I've got a couple really simple definitions. One is rock played with a distortion pedal. Another is this idea of everybody crowding around this rock played on a guitar, on a distortion pedal, as the central premise to what's going on. Led Zeppelin broke a lot of ground all along the way, but I remember this as being one of the most shocking albums to come out of the hard rock world. There were others, Stars Attention Shoppers. We might talk about some of these other shocking albums that were shocking for other reasons. But essentially, In Through the Outdoor came out. This is Led Zeppelin's, unfortunately, this was going to be their last album. And what happens on this record is Jimmy is a little under the weather. He's got his drug problem, things like that. He's a little disinterested in things. And what happens in a band when that happens is some of the other, key provocative writers often step up to the plate and write more stuff. In this case, it's John Paul Jones, Led Zeppelin's secret weapon. Always loved the guy. I thought he was an incredible talent. Obviously, he's the bass player, but he wrote a lot along the way as well, but he did quite a lot of the writing on this record, and he is the guy responsible. He also plays synthesizer, and so he is one of the guys responsible for a lot of the synthesizers on this album. Now, I love this song. I mean, I really love Carousel Ombra. It's one of my favorite Led Zeppelin songs, and this is shocking for me to say this, and this is also, You know, this may be my second favorite Led Zeppelin album, which is also shocking. We hated this record when it came out. It was not heavy at all. There were ballads on it. There was Hot Dog on it. There's really nothing heavy on it except, you know, you might say In the Evening is somewhat heavy. So all the Led Zeppelin fans were like pulling out their hair wondering what is going wrong with this band. And this is the song that is probably most indicative of this idea of synthesizers in here taking over. And why I wanted to pick this song is, I guess, another parameter of this episode is I wanted to pick things where the synthesizer is being fairly central to the melody, either on the verses or the choruses. But also what you're getting with this song also, and you're going to hear in the other songs that we picked for this episode, is that, you know, the guitarist in the band, who used to be the boss, you know, he's basically having to find ways to fit in around what's going on. So he's, you know, the guitars sometimes become the color commentary of these songs. And that's kind of what happens on Carousel Ambra. You know, it's heavy in its own way. I love the production on this record. I mean, give credit to Jimmy. Jimmy is the producer of Led Zeppelin records. But basically, I love the drum sound they get out of John, and I just love how everything integrates. So yeah, this is really the first record in this context that I can think of off the top of my head, and looking into it a little bit, where there was this this intrusion of this modern technology into what's going on. And again, we have in John Paul Jones, we have a very intellectually curious guy, so he's in there as the quote-unquote early adopter. You know, they talk about this in Computer Talk, you know, first people to get an Apple or an Atari, or first people to get a video game system. You know, you suffer when you do that. You have you're playing with pretty primitive technology that costs a lot of money and it can't do a lot, but you know, it pays off later for a lot of these people where you know, where you know, once everything becomes readily available, you're really comfortable with this sort of thing. But Led Zeppelin, so this is a great example of sort of kicking off this thing. I wanted to go chronological here. So this is 1979. As I've mentioned before, very odd year for rock. In Through the Outdoor, The Eagles' Long Run, and Pink Floyd, The Wall were kind of the bright spots in this sort of recessionary year for the record business. Okay, moving on. This is where I had a tough choice. You know, okay, so... Well, let's play this first of all, and then I'll explain. This is Genesis with Abacab. All right, so I right up to the last minute of doing this episode, I was going to pick Turn It On Again from Duke, which is March 1980. But I wanted to stick true to my premise of what shocked me. And, you know, I was probably not a particularly woke Genesis fan in 1980. And Duke is also a record that is still a transitional record into this full-on, you know, electronic synthesizer drum machine revolution that Genesis is going to shower down upon themselves. But Duke is one of the, you know, it's a record where, you know, an interesting thing happens with Genesis in that the album covers start being this crazy, totally minimalist sort of look. You look at Duke, you look at Abacab, moving on to Genesis, and then whatever the next one's called again, I forget. But also similar album cover. But anyways, the idea here is that you know, there's kind of like a visual signal going on with this switch to keyboards. And you know, God love him. I mean, basically Peter Gabriel's gone away, and he is also being very, very shocking with keyboards and synthesizer technology. Not so much on the first two solo albums, but in Melting Face, Peter Gabriel 3, that is a very, very you know. influential and revolutionary record that he's making. So it's really cool that Genesis and Peter Gabriel are really kind of moving forward into futurism, essentially, at the same time. But no, I wanted to pick Abacab, and I wanted to play essentially the very beginning of the song, because again, it shows a bit of heaviness. So I like the way that this is kind of a heavy metal song that is not written on heavy metal instruments. So it's got that drive to it, and there are some parts later on that are quite heavy. It's a really propulsive song, but I also wanted to pick this because it has that starkly stabbing synthesizer melody that sounds like a vocal melody or a guitar riff melody. And true to my premise, I mean, this is when I started getting into Genesis a little heavier and was shocked immediately by what I was hearing. And, you know, the next album, Genesis, you know, the self-titled with the little yellow blocks on the cover, that one is way more electronic. You think of something like Mama. And Phil is not scared to synthesize his natural drums, which, by the way, he has one of the greatest drum sounds of all time. I mean, the Abacab album probably is my favorite sounding album for drums, period, ever. But he's not afraid to synthesize drums with like electronic drums with his acoustic drums. And that's what I love about these mad scientists, all of them that we're going to be talking about here, that are doing that. John Paul Jones, he's playing synthesizer. He's a bassist. You know, he's a purist bassist. He comes from session work in the 60s. Phil Collins is a drummer's drummer, one of the most amazing drummers, and he's not afraid to bring in electronics to his drumming. And of course, Tony Banks is actually the keyboardist responsible for this stuff on here. But yeah, they've got bass pedals, but like I say, drum machines. So they're bringing all this stuff in. So that's kind of important in here. And like I say, hard rock context. Okay, let's take a break and we'll be right back. All right, back again, History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff. This is episode 45. We are calling this Shocked by Synths. Okay, so the next one that truly shocked me, let's take a listen to this. This is Gamma with What's Gone Is Gone. All right, Gamma, one of my favorite bands of all time, as I joked on a past episode. Actually, I think it was the very last episode on Montrose and Van Halen. I wanted to write a Montrose book, but I could only do that and excite myself on it if it was actually a Gamma and Montrose book. So I have this book called Rock the Nation, Ronnie Montrose, something something Gamma Redefined. Can't remember the title, but anyways, half that book is about Gamma and half is about Montrose. Why is half about Gamma? Gamma is one of my favorite bands of all time. They only made 3 records. Eventually they came back and did, you know, kind of a fourth one, that sort of messy thing that happens with bands. One of the cool things about Gamma is here we have another mad scientist, Ronnie Montrose. He's known as what? He's known as literally almost a guitar hero, or at least a great guitarist. But he's such a gearhead, and he loves technology. So there's a first album, Gamma 1, that has Alan Fitzgerald as the keyboardist. Now, an interesting thing here is that Alan moves on to Night Ranger, great fame and great success with Night Ranger, but Night Ranger are a band that really bring in synths. They bring in synths to the idea of hair metal. Hair metal doesn't even exist yet when Night Ranger is starting, but they're coming from what's known as kind of pomp rock. Pomp rock is also something that brought in synths. I'm just thinking of this now, but basically Night Ranger, New England, there were these bands that were kind of bringing this into like a sort of energetic, fast-paced commercial rock aspect. So Night Ranger is there. But anyways, we had Alan Fitzgerald, On the first one. We have Jim Alcivar, great guy, on the second one. But the second one is not really super, super, super synthy. I think it's one of the greatest albums of all time, Gamma 2. But it, to me, it's the more guitar-y of them. But the big shock came in with Gamma 3, which came out February 1982. Jim is gone, so third album. They even got a third, you know, this is their third keyboardist in three albums. The influential and famous and futuristic Mitchell Froom. Mitchell Froom kind of collaborates with Ronnie and all this stuff, and they make a very synthy album. But having, you know, having said that, I kind of breezed through the tracks again putting this episode together. And there's a lot of acoustic drums, there's some acoustic guitar, there's electric guitar. So again, the idea here is that all of these things have this theme where it's almost deceptively synthy. I wanted to pick a song here. I had a hard time picking a song here, but What's Gone Is Gone is kind of a good one to pick because it's the first song on the album. It was kind of one of the more prominent songs in this album. This album, like, nobody really knows about it. It's not that prominent anyways. But at the time, it did get a lot of press. They're on a major label, all that stuff. There were ads out. There were singles. But essentially, you know, I wanted to pick this song because it was one of the more synthy ones. But I noticed that there is a lot of deceptive stuff going on where there are synths, but when the verse start, things fall away, and we're kind of into a more traditional electronic situation anyways. But no, this album was very shocking overall because you know, pretty much everything on it does have a wide variety of synthesizers. Gamma was this very interesting band that right from the beginning with, you know, the Cyborg album cover on Gamma 1, the whole premise kind of along the way was they were a futuristic hard rock band. So this was something Ronnie was doing. He's coming from his Open Fire solo album into this. Really cool band. You should check them out. But yeah, they were essentially, you know, by the time they were putting this album out, well, even the first one and the second one, they are essentially, you could loosely call them a progressive metal band and one that used a lot of keyboards. Now, who else does that apply to? It applies to our number four choice here on History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff. Take a listen to this. You knew this was going to be in here. Take a listen to this. This is Rush with Subdivisions. All right, so again, this episode is called Shocked by Synths. This is the huge, huge shock. When this came out as the first song on Signals, it was incredibly shocking to Rush fans because the synth is so prominent and so important to what's going on in this song. And here we go. We have another mad scientist. So we've got John Paul Jones, purist bass player. He essentially explores synths. We have Genesis, where we have Tony Banks is the keyboardist, but Phil Collins is the purest drummer. He's loving the synths. Then we get Gamma, a guitar hero, Ronnie Montrose. He experiments with synths. And now we have another great bass player from a purist background. But, you know, Getty loved his prog. And this is the other reason I wanted to include Genesis on here, because Genesis was a big influence on Rush. You know, Rush is essentially a progressive metal band, and I just called Gamma that. But here they are really bringing keyboards into a situation in a deliberate way. And again, this is the album where, you know, Alex had, you know, they butted heads a bit because Alex said, I had a hard time finding my place, you know, to put myself along, you know, within some of these things. You think of Countdown, the big synth line in there. You know, there's a little bit of synth soloing going on. I believe in Subdivisions, there's actually some synth soloing going on. But yeah, as you notice, it's a huge thing right at the beginning. Now, another thing I wanted to mention with Rush is, well, two things. They get very deliberate and even more shocking with albums like Power Windows and Hold Your Fire, where there's loads and loads and loads of synth and electronic drums and even bass that sounds pretty synthy. So this was no errant aberration experiment. They really went wholesale into this as things moved on. Distant Early Warning on Grace Under Pressure, but I also wanted to mention an interesting thing here. Go compare Vital Signs from Moving Pictures 1980 with Fight to the Finish from Gamma from their first album, 1979. So here you have an idea of a synth, a sequenced pattern, a sequenced synth pattern serving as almost like a slash melodic slash percussive basis for a song. So you get that in Vital Signs. So Vital Signs was kind of the easing us into keyboards. Moving Pictures is always known as the record where keyboards were creeping into things, and Signals is where it was much more prominent. But I do love this idea that on the first Gamma album, you definitely hear Alan Fitzgerald doing some stuff, and I really see a parallel between Vital Signs 1980 Rush and A Fight to the Finish 1979 Gamma. All right, moving on to our last one in our History in Five Songs episode 45, Shocked by Synths. I think you knew this one was going to be here as well. Take a listen to this. This is a little band some of you might have heard of called Van Halen. This is Jump. And nothing gets me down. You got it tough. I've seen the toughest around. And I know, baby, just how. All right, so again, I always compare Jump to the album cover of Black Sabbath, Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. Now, the reason I compare these two is that I'm always shocked at how they got away with this without more, basically showing up at the castle door with torches, looking for the perpetrator. In this case, the perpetrator is Eddie Van Halen. In Black Sabbath's case, it's the Pacific Ioneer folks, Ernie Cefalu. Cefalu, did I pronounce that right? Anyways, that album cover, I still to this day, 1973, I can't believe that's on the front of a Warner Brothers, a widely released Warner Brothers record. But that's another episode. When Jump came out, it probably upset even more people than Subdivisions upset people. So now we're into January 9th, 1984. It is quite a bit later. I was quite interested to see, this timeline, this throughput of how this works. But we are up to 1984. So I guess there wasn't probably too much in the meantime that was this shocking. But so Van Halen comes out with essentially an advance single in Jump. And everybody loves it, surprisingly, including myself. I could not believe it. I mean, I was absolutely shocked, but you can't not like Jump. I mean, it's just an irresistibly charming song. But again, I wanted to pick this because for a couple of reasons. There is definitely that shock factor. The synth is the central premise of this song, like even more central than on Subdivisions. And I like the idea, again, that I paralleled in the last episode of these two totally, committed, obsessed gearheads in Ronnie Montrose and Eddie Van Halen, known for being, two of the great guitarists in the world. Certainly Eddie, he's essentially, I think Eddie is probably the first true guitar hero since Jimi Hendrix, essentially. But you get this putting aside of ego, or a certain type of ego, putting it aside to say, I'm an explorer, I'm a creative person, I don't care what paintbrush I pick up, I just want to paint. So here he is painting with synthesizers. He's just like Geddy Lee. He is essentially teaching himself how to play keyboards, and that means piano too. And both Geddy and Eddie, joke along the way of how they know they're very basic at it. They're no keyboardist. I ain't no piano player. I can't do this. But they're good. They're willing to give it the good call, the old college try, and they're willing to slowly learn how to play these instruments as time goes on and get better at them. But neither of them are afraid to put their rudimentary chicken scratch efforts straight onto their records. So that's really cool about about Jump. And again, I'll do the same parallel with that I did with Rush, Move Forward and Move Back. Essentially, Van Halen, you know, adopted this as something that they would include, but they became probably a little more annoying at it. They became more Henry Mancini, you know, electric piano or piano. So in the Van Hager years, you hear a lot of synths as well. But it's more like you hear keyboards. But this is a shocking experimental version. Later on, they almost become more conservative at it. But what I love, so the stepping back from Jump, what I love is that, you know, Eddie does some really kind of groundbreaking, interesting things with keyboards before. And again, it just is something that is creeping in. He's almost like cyborging it together with guitar, you know, making sounds that you can't even kind of figure out where they're coming from. A great example of that is And the Cradle Will Rock, where you're wondering, what is making that cool riff? And so you're hearing technology coming into these things, just in sort of you know, I'm still a hard rocker way, but I want to use some of this new technology in interesting ways. The other one that is an incredible version of this is One Foot Out the Door, which is hilarious because it's essentially a very heavy metal song, like a speed metal song almost, or a riff rocker, like, you know, something that if it was done on conventional instruments in 1978, you would think it's probably one of the heaviest songs on the album, but it's literally like a synthy thing going on. So Eddie is a great mad scientist at this stuff, and he really deserves to be lauded for what he did. So there you go. Those are the five. Those are the five that I thought, you know, I tried to rack my brains and think of what else shocked me along the way in terms of bands bringing in synths. I have a feeling this is an episode where if you go to the Facebook page for this, History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff, I'm going to get some suggestions of things I missed. You know, and it feels like some of these episodes I could almost see doing a second part because there are really cool things that get missed along the way. But I truly remember all of these being huge shocks. One other one I just wanted to mention that was a cool one that I almost put in here was Robert Plant. Not so much on the debut album, Pictures at 11, a little bit more on the second one. Hang on. Pictures at 11. I can't believe where's my signed copy up there? Right. Yes. The Principle of Moments. Long story. I did a cool trade with a buddy of mine here in Toronto. I've got a signed copy by Robert up on my wall. That actually is one of my top. I always cite it as one of my top 10 albums of all time by anybody. I truly love it as much as Physical Graffiti. So Principle of Moments, check it out. But he did, the next album was called Now and Zen, Zen and Now. I always forget the order of it. I think it's Now and Zen. So what Robert did is, if you think In Through the Outdoor is shocking, go to Now and Zen and you will be doubly and triply shocked. I hated that record when it first came out, and I'm still not a huge fan of it. But because I loved Principle of Moments so much and what Robbie Blunt was doing as a guitarist, I mean, it's criminal that guy didn't continue on and do stuff. But Robert always liked to change band members. But no, he made Principle of Moments just the most gorgeous thing. I think it's probably in terms of a guitar performance on an album. Again, you know, maybe Physical Graffiti is cooler, but Principle of Moments is a close second. But no, he's really put to the sideline on Now and Zen, and it's really all about really spazzed out, whacked out keyboards and synthesizers. It's an extremely futuristic album where Robert is just like being the fearless creative guy going way out, you know, into way past Devo land for that record. And there's lots and lots of synthesizers. Okay. Boy, that's probably the most I ever explained about something I didn't include as one of the five songs. So I hope I'm not breaking a rule too badly for you folks out there. Let's wrap it up. That's it. There you go. Episode 45, Shocked by Synths. You can go to my Facebook page, my regular one, my public person one, the History in Five Songs. You can email me at... Martin P at InfoRamp.net. Of course, MartinPopoff.com for all my books. I just had a new Rush book come out that's selling quite well called Anthem Rush in the 70s. Just had a new Saxon book come out. But yeah, looking at this list here, I've done a Led Zeppelin book. It's probably my favorite book of all that I've done because it's called All the Albums, All the Songs. I had to literally write about every single song from the Led Zeppelin catalog on that. So that's probably one of my favorite books, and it's beautiful. It's hardcover, you know, full color throughout. So yeah, so I've never written a Genesis book, but I play a heck of a lot of Genesis these days. But yeah, I have a Gamma book, and eventually when all this Rush trilogy is done, I'll have six Rush books, and I do have a Van Halen book. Yeah, interesting. Okay, so there you go. Hope you like this episode. We shall see you again next time. Bye for now.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at The RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at RNR Archaeology.
Liquid bleach, Clorox makes clothes bright. But what about these cloudy wine glasses? Add glass cleaner to my cart.
Adding Clorox disinfecting bleach to your cart.
What? No, for glassware.
Clorox can also make glassware sparkle, keep flowers fresh, and remove chocolate, wine, all your usual stains.
Rude.
Clean anything with the versatile Clorox disinfecting bleach. Discover more hacks at Clorox.com/learn.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.